Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Juror 13 show on Blog Talk Radio. My name's Denny Griffin, and for the next hour, we'll be talking about domestic violence. And co-hosting the show with me tonight is the founder of Juror 13, Miss Chloe. Chloe, thank you for being here.
Very nice to be here.
And we have two guests with us tonight, and they are actually a mother and daughter, and Miss Cherry Simpson, excuse me, and Regan Martin. And ladies, welcome to the Juror 13 show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to, for background, just read a little bit, Regan, if it's okay with you, from the story about you that appeared in the Chicago Tribune, so that people who are not familiar with your case will have a little background information.
Okay.
On Memorial Day weekend 2006, Martin lay in bed at St. James Hospital in Chicago Heights. Bruises covered most of her body. Her wrists were bloody, her lower lip split and swollen. Nurses had given her morphine and tended to her wounds. Now a police officer hovered over her bed. He wanted her to sign a complaint that would allow Will County to prosecute her husband for criminal sexual assault, aggravated domestic battery, and unlawful restraint. Wincing in pain, Martin reached out her hand. Now, there's a lot more to the story. I just wanted to use that as a lead-in. And tonight we're going to be talking about marital rape, spousal abuse, the family court system, and some other subjects I'm sure will be in the mix as well. And Regan has agreed to come on and share her story with us firsthand. And her mother, Cherry, is a victim's rights advocate and has been heavily involved in this whole process. Am I correct on that, ladies?
Yes, very correct.
Yes.
Chloe, would you like to start off with a question? Or
I was wondering if Cherry can remember how we first met.
Actually, I do. And Chloe, you were just so wonderful. Because you were like an oasis. I didn't know where to turn to try to help my daughter. Mm-hmm. And I had tried so many different avenues. And you very kindly put up a cries for help on your website. I think we met. Did we meet through Dana Pretzer's show?
No, you had written to me, and then I believe I passed a lot of that on to Susan Murphy Milano.
That's right.
And we put up our Cries for Help segment on her, but if you go to the site, you won't see it, and that's because of some of the hullabaloo that went on over that that posting later on. So you might we can probably get into that later on whenever you want to, too, that it's just was quite a mess.
Yes, I remember that, and Regan remembers it well, sitting in the courtroom and the defense attorney waving around the piece of paper in the air, and there is Juror 13's website, and he's yeah. yelling, "Grandma's been on the internet."
Yeah, and I got a lot of abuse over that for the post, and just because the trial. Well, there's a long part to that story, but when we get to that part, it had to do with the fact that because they were still in litigation, it was best for Juror 13 to take down the post to make sure there wasn't any problem for Regan. And that was a tough decision because I really wanted to keep it going. But it's been interesting to watch how this case has come out, and I will have some questions later on. So go ahead.
Regan, if I'm wondering, would you be willing to kind of continue on from where I left off the story and bring people up to date about what happened from that hospital visit and when you signed this paper, and kind of take us through what transpired since then and where you're at today? And then we'll open up the phone lines at 646-478-0982. 646-478-0982. And if anybody wants to call in with a question or comment for either of our guests, please feel free to do so. So, Reagan, if you're willing, would you go ahead and take us through from that day you were in the hospital through what happened after that?
Yeah, and I might remind you this is an hour, so I'll do my best to minimize it because it's a lot of information, but
okay.
The information I'll give, I'll try to be as brief as I can. Basically,
good.
After I got out of the hospital, they released me, and they wouldn't release my children because to anybody else besides myself, I had to go pick them up from my sister-in-law's house. From that point, I went and got an emergency OP, which is an order of protection, which allowed me to stay safe in the sense of a piece of paper. After he got out of jail, which just was, I believe, a $2,000 bond, that he posted out of our home equity loan. He got out and was driving past the house and would stalk me all over again and come to my work, put pieces of paper on my vehicle, call me, drive past the house and honk. Everywhere I went, he was at. Pretty much tried to blackmail me, broke into my house, stole my jewelry, put up pictures around the house that I took down to make sure that I knew that he was there since he said he built the house, that no one would keep him out of the house. I had to report him several times for violating the order of protection. It got to the point again where he actually violated again not beyond the first time, but again he gave me two black eyes and actually sodomized me. And then after that point, we actually went to trial. That itself was very hard. I didn't know exactly what was going to happen to my house, to my children, to myself. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what my options were. The attorneys really didn't go over any information with me on where it could go, what could happen. They basically told me that I would testify, but then if I testify, he could get off. So it came down to a plea bargain, which in the plea bargain gave him 2 years in jail. And it's not true time unless the judge stamps it. So he actually only spent, I believe, 20 months in jail. Even from jail, he was writing me letters and calling me, again, violating the OP. When I went to the district attorney's office and told them about the letters, they were only charging him with one count, which it should have been separate counts for each separate violation. The only reason I got anything done was due to Susan Murphy of Milano. She actually walked into that office with me and sat down with the attorney and basically told him that something had to be done. That's also when the Chicago Tribune came in, and Megan Toohey actually took the story and started writing on the story and going to court with me, as well as Susan Murphy Milano. There was a lot of court dates, a lot of putting me on the stand, a lot of beating up my character. Nothing really said about him or what he did to me. They were just trying to diminish my character in any sort of way possible. The district attorney, I hate to say it, but really wasn't defending me. I ran into a lot of obstacles, and I didn't know what my options were or what to do, so that's when my mom went to the Internet and asked for help. We did get a lot of help in that aspect of it. When I did go to trial, my mom and my father came with me, and during that trial, I didn't have to testify during that trial, but my mom actually read my victim's impact statement. When he got out of jail, he got out of jail on the anniversary of the actual crime. He got out, and then a couple weeks later, might have been a month, he violated the OP again because the family court's judge actually gave him my cell phone number to contact the children, even though I had a cell phone number for the children set up where he could contact them 3 days a week. He called them once. He called my phone over 42 times, basically drove around the area, told me that even though he had a GPS monitor on his ankle, that he would find me just to meet with him. He just wanted to say sorry. Basically told me that no one else would have me. If anyone had me, that he would kill them and me. It was a lot of ups and downs in between the whole trial. Other than that, I'm trying to break it down into a simplified story. But in the long run, he's still in jail now because he violated the OP for the fourth time. And actually, since I've moved, he violated it a fifth time. But where we stand now is he has no parental rights, he has no visitation, and I also have order of protection in place where I live at now, which I don't disclose. So we've been actually very safe. My children have been through therapy. I've been through therapy. They're doing very well. They're in a loving and safe atmosphere. There's no yelling, no screaming, no walking on eggshells. I lost a lot in the process, but there's nothing compared to what I have now.
When does he get out?
I believe January of 2011, so I'm still happy and safe for another year until I have to deal with any other issues at that point in time.
And he's still contacting you at all?
No, the prison finally jumped in and basically took away any of his rights to contact me or write me letters. They intercepted his mail.
Regan, what happened was the Attorney General of Illinois stepped in and he was contacting her right up until the date of the sentencing in February of 2009, and the Attorney General for the state of Illinois stepped in and made sure that the prison was abiding by the law and got it to stop. But he didn't stop until
I changed
then.
My phone number too, and so I have taken my necessary steps of not necessarily registering to vote or, you know, at the library or keeping my mail at one, you know, area. I got a book from Susan Murphy Milano told me to read, and basically to try to keep safe and keep out of the ear holes of other people that actually know me, to not pass on the word of where I'm at, what I'm doing, to kind of die down the activity. And it's nice for me because I don't necessarily deal with it every day. This is the first time I talked about it in a very long time, probably since February, which I like. It's not the easiest thing in the world to talk about. I do talk about it because I am told that as long as somebody gets something out of it, that's all I want. I don't want anyone to think that they're alone. It's a difficult subject. You feel alone. You feel like you're doing something wrong. So as long as there's other people that get something out of it, that's the only thing that's the only reason why I do it and talk about it. I hate therapy. I hate talking about it. So that's the only reason.
Well, you and your mom have been very brave going through all this, and I'm really glad that you reached out to the community.
Well, I'll tell you what, the only thing, I'm not like a secluded person, but it's not like I like to, you know, air my dirty laundry or anything, but I got to the point where I lived in a small town, and it couldn't hurt me any more than what small town rumors were going around, you know, that I was cheating, and that's why he did it, and all these just ridiculous rumors were spread, and that is not even the reason why. I mean, it's in the police report. It's the documents that show exactly what he did. The proof is in that. And as my mom says, you shine the light on the sin, and that's what's going to come out. And it was nothing but the truth. And I said, as long as I did the Tribune, as long as it was a true story, I wanted it out there so everyone could read the true story. It had to be documented, and I wanted it to be read that way. Because that way it put everyone in their place, and they all understood, and it wasn't just rumors. It was the truth, and that's all I wanted from it. And I wanted other people to know that this is what happened, that, you know, that these are the avenues you can take to get help or, you know, I mean, because I was dumbfounded. I had no options whatsoever. I just felt like, you know, I just had to deal with it. And when I went back to family court and they gave him his phone number, I was back at square one, you know, and I don't want other people to feel like that. There should be other avenues, other, you know, people to help in that matter, but it's a difficult subject, different. Difficult altogether, and if I didn't have my mother on it 24/7, I would not have had any of this. So,
have they actually not done the plea bargain? What would his sentence have been?
6 to 12 years.
And
he would have been charged with rape, and he would not have any options to see his children because he would have to register as a sex offender. And I was not told any of that. I wasn't told any options. And at the time, I was just scared. And I didn't, you know, I ended up, you know, losing my house. I ended up moving and, you know, with my brother. I ended up, you know, basically going from having everything and portraying a happy family because that's what I wanted, you know, when behind closed doors, it was totally different. But like I said, when I went from, everyone said, well, how can you go from having everything to nothing? But it means the world to me just to see my kids safe and happy and not, you know, running upstairs to the room or hiding or crying or trying to defend them or, you know, putting myself in between, you know, my ex-husband and my children because he was hitting them. It wasn't just me. He was hitting the children, you know, my boys. So right now, I mean, they're getting older now where they understand that, you know, that's not right. And whenever, even today, when they hear anybody yell, they get scared, you know, and they have certain little issues. But that's one thing we don't do. No one in the house yells. No one takes the steps that, you know, of any type of anger whatsoever, and they're happy children. They're smile. You know, they're smiling. They're doing great in school. I mean, I couldn't wish for anything more.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm glad to see that's coming about for you in your life.
Cherry?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, as Regan said a few minutes ago, she was in obviously to a totally strange, unfamiliar environment with this thing, and was trying to get a grip on what was going on, and apparently with less than adequate briefing and communication from some quarters, and you, as she said, got into this 24/7 with her to help. Had you been helping any other women before, or was this all new to you also?
Actually, I did. Before I helped my own daughter, I helped a little girl by the name of Becca McAvoy, and it was just a strange turn of events that I started to help this little girl's family, and everybody kept asking me, why are you helping this little girl's family, and I would tell them the story of my daughter, and then that's how that came about, and You know, when you are thrust, when you're just a normal person, and that's all Regan and I are. We're just, you know, we grew up in a very rural farmland community in Illinois and went to church. Regan went to a Christian day school. She, you know, graduated from high school, was All-American for the state of Illinois, went to Lake Forest College on a full scholarship. You know, she married somebody who kept his past a secret. And, in fact, we didn't even know what his past was until we were sitting across the desk in the DA's office. You know, and you don't, when you've never met a criminal, when you don't know what it is that this person, who this person is or what it is that they're doing, you expect that the government's going to just take care of you, and that's not what happens. We didn't know what to do. I mean, I was told numerous times to keep my nose out of it. Then my dad died, and my dad, the sermon was on being the great protector, and I'll never forget that because that's when it dawned on me that's my job. That's all of our jobs as parents. We are to be our children's great protectors. And so I did stick my nose into it as much as I possibly could. And in fact, the Cindy Bischoff Foundation got Harvard Law to write the lethality assessment for my daughter, which he met 13 of the 16 points for murder or suicide. In fact, he's the sole surviving male in his family. His father, his uncle committed suicide, and his grandfather and his uncle committed suicide, and his father's death is very questionable as to whether or not it was suicide. His father was battered his mother and him severely, and his sister severely. But you know, to get back to the court system, we didn't know what you expect that the court system is going to do something to protect you. And really what happened is Regan just was the one, you know, that was prosecuted in Miami. You know, she was the one who was sentenced and prosecuted. He never got asked a question whatsoever. You know, they asked her just ridiculous things, you know, which were all out and out lies. I mean, my mother sat there in the courtroom. She's near 80, and I remember her sitting there saying, how can that defense attorney lie like that? And Susan Murphy Milano turned to me. A lawyer that we got to represent Regan through Harvard Law turned to my mother and said, that's what defense attorneys do.
Yeah. Can we interrupt just a second? We have a caller on the line. I don't want to leave the caller holding much longer, so I'm going to go ahead and answer the call. Area code 502, you're on the line. Go ahead, please.
Hi, yes. I was calling in this evening. My name's Melissa Poliskowitz. I'm the third wife beaten by a man in Pennsylvania who has a brother that's a policeman who's had it all hidden for years. And I was calling in, I guess the courts have been not listening to any of us or never listened to the children. There's many conflicts of interest in the courts. No communication with DA in our particular area. And the victims are left without knowledge and communication. So that's been our most difficult thing with the courts and abuse. In my particular case, the first wife was beaten, had broken bones. I'm the third wife. I had broken bones. The DA never looked at the evidence from his incarceration. My case was hid in the DA's desk for 10 months until I went to national press. And I'm not the only woman victim in that county. I've written letters upon letters, communicated with many people, and no one has jurisdiction for a district attorney's office. So when you get these elected officials in there and these prosecuting attorneys that put your nose up, and first of all, they said I was a drunk, first of all. Next, they say I'm nuts. Next, they say that because just I'm trying to get justice for my husband who's still free. The courts have been horrible. They've cheered in the courtroom in my protection from abuse hearing of water in the courts, and my husband has said, thanks, Judge, for being friends of the family. I have 8 witnesses to that. I have so much abuse in these courts that I have never in my life seen anything so horrid. And what I think the court systems need to do is separate the domestic violence courtrooms from the family courtrooms. And when there's a domestic violence, they need to be tried as a domestic violence case and not back into the courtrooms, because these children are thrown around from parent to parent and they're thrown back with the abusers in this particular county in Pennsylvania. And the children don't want to be there because they've already called 911 and the police don't respond. And I have many recordings of our children calling and the other cases that I know of. People call me all the time, weekly, with new cases and how that particular DA, I just got a letter back from the Attorney General saying they have no jurisdiction over a DA that's elected. So,
unfortunately, the abuser always has more rights than the victim themselves.
Yeah.
Well, and the children don't even have a say in the matter, and they're just thrown into the abuser's
it's just horrid.
It's horrible. And then they, from what I've witnessed, is they use it against, you know, myself. Like, he would use the children against me and say, Mommy, why don't you want to be a family? Daddy's crying. And just use the children against me and then call them and say, oh, do you have pictures of Mommy? And just ask them questions about me. Not just true sense of, hey, how are you? How's your day going? And really care about the children themselves. They use them as a piece of property to get to the victim.
Right. But more importantly, our Victim Rights Act.
We don't have it.
Yeah, well, there is acts. There is the Victims' Rights Act where you have all these acts. I mean, the prosecuting attorney is supposed to represent the victims. They're not doing it.
No, they're not.
They're not doing it.
Can I say something? One of the things that we did is we contacted the Attorney General's office and asked to speak with a policymaker. They're the ones that actually try to intercede on the victim's parts. And then the other thing we tried to do is find an activist. There's a difference between an advocate and an activist. And okay. we met Jennifer Jenkins of Illinois Victims, and she was very helpful and came up with many suggestions. Then also we got a GPS monitor placed on him when he got out. And then even when the courts, even this last time after all of his violations, they only sentenced him to 30 additional months probation. But we went back to the Attorney General's office, and the Attorney General's office contacted the Prison Review Board and the Parole Board, and they had all of his good time taken away from him, and then they brought him up on judicial review. That's something else that we did, is we supplied all of the evidence, not only to the DA's office, but to the Prison Review Board and the Parole Board, and we actually got him moved from a minimum maximum security prison to a medium maximum security prison, and we got all of his good time taken away from him, and they revoked his parole.
Mom, first of all, they didn't take away his good time. They actually corrected it.
No, this last time.
Oh, the second time? Okay.
Yeah.
The first time they corrected it.
No, the first time they corrected it, but that was from the actual rape. But this time, the Attorney General had, I think it was a year. That's the maximum that they can take away. But there's all kinds of crazy laws out there. We were told that he got credit for 7 weeks, because he committed the crime while he was in prison.
Hmm.
And, you know, my husband said, oh, that's great. Why doesn't he just keep committing crimes while he's in prison? He'll get out tomorrow. You know,
horrible.
I mean, there's all kinds of crazy laws like that.
Well, yeah, my rape was never done because the DA hid my rape in the part of the criminal complaint that I filed. I filed my complaint after firing the attorney I had connected with the county. After 6 months of him telling me, something's going on, 6 months listening to my attorney, but he was a criminal defense on the DA's side and my husband's. I fired him, and he got mad because I wanted to go to the Attorney General after 6 months. Then so I started working on my own without attorneys and was learning the laws and trying to move forward with not believing what had just happened to me and the three children. I mean, there's child abuse involved. There's all this stuff involved.
Do you have family helping you at all?
Yes, supportive now. Now I'm helping domestic violence victims in the same county that are losing children because of what's going on in the courts, and I don't know where to go.
Ladies, let me interrupt for a second. We have another caller. Melissa, can you stay on the line with us, and let's see what the next caller has to say.
Okay.
Area code 203, you're on. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Denny. Vito Colucci here.
Vito, greetings.
How are you? Can I make a couple comments here?
Certainly can.
Very interesting show. Very sad commentary on our country here and the court system and, unfortunately, some of the police departments. I want to give you a quick scenario of a case I just got 2 weeks ago. Woman had an affair with a police officer, married police officer. Subsequently, cutting to the chase, he wound up getting arrested for domestic violence with this woman. She hired an attorney. She hired me. The cop, who's now an ex-cop, him and his attorney have been yelling and screaming that this was just a 2-3-week-old affair and that she stalked him after that and threatened to ruin his career and the whole bet. Little did they know that we compiled all of the greeting cards, birthday cards, anniversary cards, notes, everything else that he had given her over a 4-year period from 2005 to the beginning of this year, all of which he dated each card, you know, like let's say June 2006, and then he signed his full name on the bottom. So what we're doing is we're piecing this together. We found, just as of today, we found another woman down south who formerly lived up here that had an affair with him. Same type of thing went on during her marriage. He was the cause of the breakup of their marriage. And see, they want to yell very loud in the court steps that, you know, our lady is the problem here because she's a stalker. But they didn't realize we compiled all of this stuff. You know, we talked to neighbors that saw him come with the police car over the span of years. He had his own garage door opener, pulled the police car on duty into her garage, had sex on duty, didn't answer calls on duty. So, you know, what you do in cases like this, and it's a shame that the victim has to put out money to lawyers, let's say, to a private detective or whatever it may be. But it's unfortunately the way that we have to go nowadays to fight this. The sad last commentary on this whole thing, Denny, is that several years ago they had an opportunity to throw this guy off the police department. He was caught numerous times and even admitted to looking in windows, okay? So much so that the good cops on the job gave him a name of Windows 98, of all things. Okay?
Okay.
So, I mean, if it wasn't so sad, it would be comical. Okay? Yeah. And the cops that I have talked to, by like 98% to 2, all hate this guy and all feel, you know, terrible about what he has done. He still has a couple cronies, one of which said to me the other day, well, you know, Vito, it's really not what it is. You know, she's a wackadoo. She stalked him the whole bit. And you know, since we already came out to the press, it's going to be printed soon about all the evidence we have, I said, oh, really? Did you realize for 4 years he's been you know, seeing her, cards, taking her to concerts, the whole bit, and threatening her, and he's the one arrested for domestic violence. And he, a 24-year veteran, that he's going to be getting his pension, which I'm very much against, and I want to see how this all plays out down the road. So this, I'm only giving you this scenario after listening to the show, and I'm hearing somebody say that somebody was a member of the police department on the family. And see, these things, unfortunately, Denny, you have to yell loud and clear when you know what goes on, because a lot of times people are not going to believe you, and it's a shame. Thank God for the Susan Murphy Milanos of the world. Thank God for shows mm-hmm. like this and mm-hmm. all the people that put this stuff out there, you know? And I just wanted to give you that because I'm doing it right now with a cop, and we got him nailed good, and there's no way he can get out of this. So I just wanted to share that with you guys, just as some kind of a hope, you know?
May I make a comment? With what you're saying, because I did a lawsuit years back, I actually sued an attorney and won. Taking notes is so important. Writing it on a calendar, a special notebook, something, too, that can be hidden that your spouse or whomever can't find. Sharing it with other people. But all that is so important. But the biggest thing I'm hearing tonight, too, is you have to scream loud and hard in behalf of yourself, because these guys aren't going to do it. You have to let other people know. You have find out and contact the proper authorities. And I would suggest Susan Murphy Milano's books as a great resource, and anybody else's suggestions that they'd be giving tonight.
Chloe, you know, this is Cherry, and what I think what you're saying is very true, and what I've come to believe is ask and tell. You know, when I found out what happened, I told everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I told, you know, and I think that was the best thing, and because he couldn't lie anymore. That's mm-hmm. where they try to hide. They try mm-hmm. to convince with lies. They try to slander the wife. They scream and yell extremely loud because they're hoping the victim will go away. Mm-hmm. And your last caller, Vito, that was a wonderful suggestion that he made to document everything. That's exactly what Regan did. She's got a 3-ring binder that's 3 inches thick and a timeline, and it's all in there chronologically. In fact, we've just gotten Justice for Children to take her case when he does get out in 2011 and try to prevent him from having any more communication with his children. The courts are terrible about victims' rights, and something does need to be done about it. But yes, I think we all have to try to help one another. Mothers need to help their daughters.
When I first heard this story, Cherry, Tim and I looked at each other when you first wrote to me, and we said, this one could die. That's exactly was our first statement to each other, because it was that was just too scary. This is exactly what you see coming just before you, you know, get it in the paper. So your moves were, I think, is what's keeping her alive. And I'm really glad that everybody's fighting hard for this, but you really, all those listeners out there, fight for yourselves. Research. You know, go ahead.
Can I say one more thing and then I'll hang up here? I'm reading the blogs here and I see something that's very interesting and very true. Annie Jacoby over here has put something on here that I totally agree with. Let me just pull this up again here. Men Against Violence. We need good men in our corners. Now, think about what she wrote there. I listen to the shows. I appear on these shows. And what do I hear? 95% of women, okay, all bonding together, all fighting this, all doing whatever they can. Once in a while, somebody like Denny or me or somebody will appear on the show. But by and large, it's all women saying, look what I've gone through. You need to have as many men across this country yelling and screaming. And I just, you know, I'm looking at the blog here, and I said, wow, that is such a true statement. This has to be done. I work these cases, so I'm able to do what I can do. You know, I'm able to get on a platform. I do television several times a week, depending on what case. But we need just a regular guy on the street that says, I'm not going to take this anymore. If I know this is going on, I'm going to speak my mind too. And I think that's something for all the listeners, you know, to really think about is we need to have more men on these shows or calling in or doing whatever just to show that, they're, you know, how they feel about this issue.
I agree.
Yep.
More. Yes, exactly. When this is Melissa. When my advocate, Heidi Marco, spoke out in front of the courthouse and we had a press conference because we were against the plea bargain because they never had my medical records of my broken bones, and the DA, my prosecuting attorney, would never meet with me from the time he was incarcerated and still hasn't to this day. We had a conference, and all of us were, of course, we had the first wife, the second wife, and the third wife all speak out for the first time together on this abuser. But what happened is the men started bashing us, and then as soon as we said that on the courthouse steps, 3 to 5 days later, we were bashed as male bashers. And all we were is trying to get justice for our victims' rights on what had happened to us in our domestic violence. And that's all it was. But
you know, it sounds like she had a DA like you did, Regan.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, even with my case, my ex-husband confessed to raping me, and that was never used.
That's not fair.
That was in the first report part when he said, she said no, he handcuffed me, raped me, and beat me, and he confessed to it.
He wrote it, too. It was a written confession, just a verbal, but a written confession.
Well, I'll tell you what, police departments, and especially during election years, your politicians, et cetera, do not like to have even blogs put out there about them that might hurt their vote or look bad for the police department. So get your voices out there, call them by name, and let them know who's not paying attention to you.
Yeah, don't be afraid.
Right, but the local papers are not doing justice, but the national TV gives us the truth.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. The local papers are connected with the DAs because they have offices in the DA's in the courthouse buildings. So there's only just so much. I can even write a letter to the editor. I even spoke to the editor of one of the local papers, and I said, what a disappointment on that article you wrote on April 22nd. I said, I write letters to the editors, and you won't even print the truth for me.
Well, I think that's true about some papers, but Chicago Tribune did an excellent job on Regan's. And, I mean, we had to fax in over 40 documents, which proved everything that was going to be put into the paper. Now, that's a document that everybody can see. That's a story that those boys one day can look at and they will be able to discern for themselves the truth. Mm-hmm. If we had not done that, it would have just been a he said, you know, she said thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, no, thank goodness that the Tribune got it and they got it right. And, you know, thank goodness that we did get help from the Cindy Bischoff Foundation. But, you know, I was going to say, Chloe, when you mentioned earlier that you thought that this was one that could die, Cindy Bischoff's mother actually spoke to me, and she told me that right up until the day that her daughter was murdered, they never thought that he would kill her.
Mm.
And and also Cindy's brother told me that they had never met a criminal before he murdered, you know, his sister. And now look at what they've done. I mean, they've helped to bring the GPS monitoring system, you know, into many states, which I think is a wonderful tool to, you know, help to curb some of this domestic violence. Because those order of protections, I mean, they should be called please stay aways. They are not a truthful statement. You know?
Very good, though, Mom.
Yeah.
It's so
well,
true. I agree. A piece of paper is not going to, you know, save a bullet from hitting me. I fully agree.
Uh-huh. And the stalking laws, oh, my gosh, we had a federal prosecutor look at Regan's case. And, you know, I mean, where's the beef in these laws? Remember that old lady on the Burger King commercials? Where's the beef? Where is the beef of the stalking laws? You know, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, in this country, you know, women are being blamed for getting themselves beat up and raped by the men that they marry and then chastised for not liking them later. You know,
I was always asked, what did I do to make him do what he did to me?
And
the only response
Connelly.
I ever had was, what did Jeffrey Dahmer do, you know, to expect them
look
to
at the Connelly boys in Illinois, the two little Connelly boys. That man violated the order of protection 57 times. You know, he went into court with his psychiatrist. The psychiatrist said that he was severely depressed, and the judge decided that he wanted him to be a good dad because he had presented himself well. And he didn't, you know, he thought maybe this would help him get out of his depression. Give him a puppy. Don't give him two live little boys. You know, but that's what these courts are doing. And then what got me in Regan's case is the family courts are overturning criminal order of protection. In Regan's case, that was a criminal case. It started out as a criminal sexual assault, unlawful restraint because he used handcuffs behind her back. You know, and aggravated domestic violence, which is a very severe domestic violence charge.
I'm surprised they didn't get him for kidnapping.
They didn't. In her police report, she also tells them, you know, of him hurting the boys. They never prosecuted him for that either. You know, it's funny what you end up learning, you know, about the law. But I think we all need. You know what I always think of? I think of the Good Samaritan. You know that Good Samaritan, he was kind of, you know, he was one of these, the Samaritans were not people that were looked down on, you know, and here was a priest that walked by the person that was in the gutter, you know, and then I can't remember who the other guy was that walked by and did nothing, but the Good Samaritan stopped and took care of him and watched over him. That's because he had empathy for him. And that's what we all have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it would be nice, just as Vito said, to have some more men. I've said that a million times. Where are the men in this?
Well, you know, when my daughter got a divorce years ago, Tim and I were just internet friends at the time. And I was telling him some of the stuff that she was going through. He instantly started telling me in my own town where all the help centers were, domestic violence places, because he went in and researched it. So here's my friend just giving me all this advice for my daughter, who also saved notes, which helped her out later on because she got one check with a picture of a knife with blood coming off of it. She had a recording. I don't remember what that was. I made her. And then he bashed her windows out on her van, and I made her literally go in and file reports on all of this stuff. And save that. And when he took her back to court, she had that. And his lawyer, who's supposed to be one of the best in the area, just looked at him and said, "You never told me about all this." So that's where I'm taking those notes and all that kind of stuff. But there are good men out there. In fact, I married him. So
yes, no,
you know. But he's one. You know, he's wonderful. He sees these people as cowards. You don't do this to somebody you love.
I agree. And Regan has been extremely diligent. She just went in even after, and I mean, you know, she has spent two to three years in court being bashed. Nobody paid for us to go up there. We flew up there on our own accord with our own money and put ourselves up in a hotel and rented our own cars and did all of that and sat there for hours on end, you know, day after day to make sure that this man was taken off of the streets. And she's been very diligent down when she went and she recently got another order of protection. They, you know, their attitude was kind of in the court, well, he's in jail. You know what? Good for her. She stood up there and she said, if you don't give this to me when he gets out, his attorney's going to say you weren't really afraid. Oh. And I thought, thank God Regan speaks up.
How often do you have to renew that?
Every year.
Every year. Okay. Well, you just keep renewing it.
It also costs $22,000 to get out of the state of Illinois. With attorney's fees.
You know, ladies, let me, all this stuff is obviously upsetting. One of the things I find extremely scary, and I think it was Melissa who mentioned her abuser saying to the judge, thanks for being a friend to the family or something like that. And it's not, I don't think, just the domestic violence cases, but I'm running into a lot of scenarios in which you seem to have these, what do they call them, the good old boy networks where certain communities, everybody knows each other and everybody's a cousin or an in-law or an outlaw and these types of things. And, you know, when it's got to be very frustrating, and I think that's been expressed here tonight, of when you don't know where to go. You know, if you suspect that perhaps the DA, for example, didn't do a very good job for you, withholding information or not telling you the different things you could do. And then they don't want to meet with you and they won't return phone calls and so on. That's got to be just maddening. And I don't really know what to do about it. It seems like in a lot of these cases, there's no really place to go with it. Am I right?
No,
or is that
there's
correct?
Nowhere to go.
They never return calls. I agree.
There's nowhere to go. I've had on my case, my particular case, this is Melissa, I've had judges recused, and only because I had every moment of every day I had to be there doing something to know what they were doing to me. Mm-hmm. I've had police. I've had sheriffs. I've been threatened to be arrested 3 times just a month ago for trying to get a court transcript on another victim and asked what I'm doing at the courthouse, and that is a taxpayer's building. Just asking to get court transcripts for my hearing that took six, seven weeks to get a transcript. It's just unheard of. They said they don't want me in the building anymore. I mean, that's wrong. I've had the magistrate's office. It ends up that the police response to many times of coming to the house with the children called because he was abusing me in the house, and then later he beat me in a barn and dragged me into a barn and beat me with the chickens and the goats. And I have cell phone recordings on my cell phone that he had in his pocket that recorded the beating of me while he was on top of me.
Wow.
And then later took me to the house and had fed my daughter arsenic pizza and sent her to the basement, and I couldn't go down to see her, and then later raped me and sat there and watched my body in a bathtub of water. I mean, the guy is sick, but I've been from the police, no help, the magistrates, no help. They all saying I'm a drunk, I'm a this, I'm a that, I'm a nut. I mean, all the way up. There was, and one of the policemen told me on one of the times he came out, he said, he pulled me to the side. He goes, ma'am, we've been here many times. If I were you, I'd get out of here. So I've had it all the way up to the DA's office that didn't want to do anything. And then when I fled the house after being beaten, they criticized me because I was trying to figure out how to get the children, the cat he was kicking around, the other animals in the house, and everything. They criticized me for not leaving, but I had broken bones in my body also, and I still have bruises on my body. So what they say, they keep criticizing you, but you have to speak back at them when they do.
You know what, Denny?
Yeah.
I've got old Wise One on the other phone, and I think he'd like to say something.
Okay.
Yes, please, go ahead.
I know I'm not real representative of all the males out there, but I have to say from my point of view as a man, I think Lois said it right up front. I can't believe cowardice in not only the attackers, but those that defend the attackers. And I hear you talk about the Good Old Boy Network. Yeah, it's there. It's live. It exists, and it should be abolished. Unfortunately, there's not enough damage done for it to come to light in most cities. We live just outside of L.A., where I think most everybody knows that it eventually got so out of hand that the federal courts had to step in and do something about it. But I would say in most towns, that's never quite the case. It's just enough to make everybody kind of toe their line, but not enough to expose themselves to the light of day and where the court will do something about it. And it's wrong. I don't know exactly how you ferret them out. I do know that as soon as they are made known, that's the first thing everybody has to jump on, is they have to put an end to that kind of a blue line Good Old Boy Network and start getting people working for them.
One of the things that they do down in San Diego, we're not too far from San Diego, is if there's a domestic violence case, regardless of whether it's the man or the woman, and it does happen the opposite way, you will be arrested and there will be charges put against you. The wife or the male, we have a male friend who is being abused, will go to jail for that night, and they will be arrested and they will be charged. That's just the law down here.
Yeah, they don't leave it up to the victim to press charges. It's an instantaneous pressing of charges.
So,
on my case, I reported it to the detective. Was shown my pictures and called on the day that I went to the PFA court to get my protection from abuse. And he told me to call the police, and the police go, "Ma'am, we're sick and tired of you. I don't want to hear from you anymore."
Mm-hmm.
And that's how my physical assault was not able to be reported to the detective of the DA's office and also to the police of this particular county. So it's been horrible.
Do they have an internal affairs office there?
I wrote internal affairs for the state of Pennsylvania, and they know all about it, but nothing. They
have
don't
you
have
tried,
any jurisdiction over the DA.
Have you tried Trinova?
No.
Trinova with Dr. Will Marling. He was very helpful. He's the one that put me in touch with the activist in Illinois. They're one of the largest national victims' rights organizations. And he gave me a direct line into the Department of Justice.
Oh, good.
I know, because I had called. One day I tried calling the Department of Justice, and I was like on hold forever. And then I contacted him, and he was wonderful, and he gave me a direct line. I mean, this is what we did: is we just didn't stop. We didn't take no for an answer.
Well, I'm not stopping because
right.
There's another victim I have, and she tried to do her physical assault also, and she was denied. Then I have another girl that was just denied a PFA because they changed the PFA hearing date. I have another girl that was shot in the foot with a gun, and she was denied. It was her boyfriend that shot her in the foot with a gun. You know, she was denied. I mean, this is not only just my one case. You're just hearing of mine.
Well,
I
think, unfortunately, the court system, this is just my opinion, but I kind of liken it to going
mm-hmm.
through the McDonald's drive-thru. You know they're
mm-hmm.
going to get your order screwed up. Regan, tell them what happened the last time we tried.
Mm-hmm.
You got your last order of protection, and he didn't get served up until
yeah.
It went from September until February, and it wasn't until we physically went down. And
they had,
what happened?
Yeah, they had the address totally backwards. We gave them both address, both where he was incarcerated at and his home address. They imposed his home address with his incarceration address. So they put his street address with the incarceration address for the street or for the city and state. So they never contacted me that he was never served. They never contacted me for any other reason that he has not received it. So until I asked them to see what they had on their files, and I said, "This is the wrong address. This is not what I gave you." And so then that's finally when they served him.
Yeah, you have to stay up on it all the time.
Yeah, that's why I said, unfortunately, you know, if I didn't have my mother on 24/7, I mean, I'm a mother of three children. There's no way, and I worked full-time, and I was trying to support my children. And, you know, thank goodness she wasn't working, and she could go on the Internet and find all these wonderful people that were able to help. But if she wasn't doing that, I would be as dumbfounded as half of these people are on what to do.
Yeah, you do. I hate to say it, but it's a full-time job staying on top of the courts.
It is, and that's why I would really like to see. That was one thing. We were very lucky in some of the shelters that Regan went to that they were very good. Others were not so good, but they were in rural areas, you know. And I would like, but you know what? None of them had anything like Al-Anon does, you know, for alcoholics, families. I'd like to see something that helps to tell families what they can do to help their loved ones.
Here's something that Old Wiseman just brought up. He wanted to know if anybody would be interested in starting up a group where people can go for all this kind of information. He could set up a website for it to where everybody can just give their advice, who they call in their particular state, et cetera, tell their stories, anything like that. So if anybody is interested in doing that, he's the webmaster to put it up.
Oh, good. Well,
I think Stop Family Violence has a very, very, you know, something similar to that, and they also have a very nice interactive part to their website where that you can contact all of your legal officials, all of the media that is either in your direct location or nationally. That's what helped me with Stop Family Violence. And then also the National Domestic Violence Hotline. They're very innovative. They started out of Austin, Texas, and in fact, they have just begun to build shelters that are not in hiding, but are now out in the open. Now they do have very tall walls with barbed wire, but they're not hiding anymore, and they don't discriminate.
Somebody be sure and send a link on that to me, any of these violence places. I have a place on my front page that I can at least list the links. So
sure.
If someone should ask, and you can, my website's www.juror13.com, and there is a place on front for contact information. You can change the subject to anything. It all comes to me. I'll be glad to list it.
Ladies, we're running out of time rapidly. We got one call that's still pending, so I'd like to try to get to that caller before we get cut off here. Area code 610, you're on. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, you're on.
Okay. I just want to call and say that I'm currently a victim of domestic violence, and my husband beat me up back in 2007 in September. I'm currently in a homeless shelter, and I'm in a situation where I have three children, and I had a PFA for 2 years, and my PFA was dropped, and now the county that I'm in, they're going to be giving my children to the abuser, to my husband. They never notified me. I went to court, and I found out that my PFA was dropped. I was never notified of it. My husband's assault charge got dropped down to a harassment. They stuck him in an ARD program for alcohol and drugs, which he didn't have any of. And now he is on probation for 6 months and is paying for it every month at the very end of the month so that I'm behind, which has been part of the reason why I couldn't get on my feet. And I just found out that his attorney is trying to get temporary custody of my children so that he doesn't have to pay child support. And then while I'm getting on my feet and once I find a job, then he'll go after me for child support. and they're going to take my kids away from me. And the whole reason I finally got the courage to leave him was because of my children, so that they didn't have to see me being beat up and abused, and so that they didn't have to be abused. And now everything that I worked so hard to do to keep my kids from him, because he's abusive to all of us, and my kids, they don't want to live with him, and, you know, I'm in this shelter, and they're supposed to be helping me, and then Children and Youth got involved, and I opened a case with Children and Youth so that I could get into the shelter because I needed help. And now they're going to turn around and give my kids right to my husband. And I just don't know what to do. I'm so frustrated. I feel like I'm being victimized all over again, and I'm really scared because I'm afraid that I'm going to lose my kids, and the court system has not done anything to help me. In fact, they've catered to the abuser. They never notified me of his ARD program. I found out when I phoned in, and found out months later. He got 5 continuances and for his criminal hearing, which never happened then because they just did a plea with him and dropped his assault down to a simple harassment charge. And then never notified me and never told me what he had to do, or I'm not allowed to know any of that. And that's what's wrong with the court system, is that, you know, women who are victimized and abused should have that right to know that what the abuser, what he has to undergo in order to get help and in order for us to see justice. And there is none.
Caller, I don't mean to be rude here, but we ran out of time. The show is not being streaming live anymore. However, what we're talking about now will be available through the archives. And some of the people in the chat room wanted some information about you. They were curious, like, you know, what jurisdiction you're in, what court system, and that type of thing. Can you tell us anything about that, like where you're from? Or?
I'm in Northampton County Courthouse. Northampton County is where I'm from, and I'm in Easton and Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Is there who on the chat board can she contact so that she could start getting some help?
Has she contacted Heidi Markov, that the other caller that called in? Heidi is a good advocate that's in that area.
Okay.
And what I'd like to do, everybody's I'm in the doghouse because we didn't schedule enough time. So I promised in the chat room that I would ask Cherry and Regan and Miss Chloe and the callers and listeners, I'd like to schedule another show where we can continue this. Obviously, we could have done another half hour, if not an hour, with no problem tonight. Could I entice you ladies into agreeing to come back on in the fairly near future, and we'll continue this and maybe get out some more information and about where people can go for help and that type of thing.
And I don't remember the caller's name. What was your name, dear?
Kim.
Kim?
Kim
you,
is in the same county
site?
That I am, Melissa. Kim's in the same county I am in Pennsylvania.
Okay, Melissa.
Yeah.
Do you have an email address that you can give out that she can contact you?
Yeah. Kim? Do you have my email address?
I do.
Melissa at .mcshane@yahoo.com.
Yeah, I do have yours.
Okay.
And then also, if you want to contact me, I can give it on to a few people here that are victim advocate people and work in that area. So if you want to go to my front page, there's a contact. or it's just admin@dura13.com.
Okay.
And so if you want to contact me, I will send other people your contact information and you their contact information. Maybe that'll help.
Okay. What is it again? Because I'm on my cell phone.
Okay. It's admin, A-D-M-I-N. Go ahead.
Maybe you can email it to me?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I can email it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll email it to her.
Okay.
That would be good.
Okay,
and then we can get the message out to everybody, and they can start contacting you also. And so you have a place where you can pick up email then, right?
I do, I can go to the library. I have a library card.
Okay, very good.
So,
well, I thank you all very much for being guests, and thank you, Denny, for being such a wonderful host.
Well, thank you, and Cherry and Regan, you guys agree to come back on?
Yes, thank you.
I want to do it fairly soon because everybody's fired up. So I'll be in touch with Cherry. I'll give you an email and we'll discuss some possible dates.
Can I say one thing? I just want to tell those other women that I think they're wonderful, heroic mothers, and I am praying for them.
Thank you.
Thank you. Because we need some help. We don't know. We're trying real hard. That's all I can say.
Yep.
Well, I'll be glad to share with you anything that I've learned, you know, from Regan's case. And I do have a long laundry list of names. I'll be more than happy to share with you. And,
well, Tuesday I'm going to custody court about my children. So really great.
Well, thank you, everyone. I'm going to hang up now, and I'll be in my chat room. If anybody wants to chat, I'll be in there for a little bit.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Okay, and
bye.
We'll send out the message as soon as we get the next show scheduled.
Okay.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good night. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.